Good morning. It is time to get up with the biggest game of the year. We'll tell you how number four can be his absolute best in week number five. Meanwhile, it's Wilson versus Wilson, a mile high with the stakes even higher. Will Zach or Russ turn last weekend into the beginning of something? Because only one of them can. Plus, season on the line for these star QBs. We'll tell you which ones will be done when the clock strikes midnight on Monday morning. All that, a whole lot more. Let's go. The Thursday squad is here. Come on, baby. Orlovsky is ready to go. Kmart's got stories left and right. Harry's going to catch a touchdown, and the big fella's back, and he's going to smash a few helmets.
I'm actually using a mug.
Let's get this thing going. Week five starts tonight. Let's think about what we're looking for. Dan, what are you watching for this week?
Justin Fields' back foot and the conviction off his throws. When Justin Fields sees it and lets it rip, he can play. And the ability to drive the football downfield and be aggressive with it and accurate is his superpower. I want to see if Justin Fields, who did that this past Sunday, can do it again Thursday night in front of the national television audience.
That's tonight against the Commanders for the unbeaten Bears, or the beaten Bears. Kmart, what are you watching for?
Greeny, I just want to know, will the Pittsburgh Steelers ever get right? Listen, Mike Tomlin said there will be changes, and then no changes came. So now it's on Matt Canada to figure out how to make this offense explosive. You would think the Steelers, honestly, were 0-4.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like something is going on in Pittsburgh, but hopefully they get it right soon.
And hopefully Kenny Pickett is healthy enough to play. It looks like he will be. D. Wood, what are you watching for?
Yeah, can Mac Jones and this Patriots offense create some explosive plays? Listen, this offensive line has not been playing well. Mac has been jittery in the pocket with his fundamentals. Can these guys, with Mac Jones at quarterback, create some chunk plays to help this offense be in better position to score more points for New England?
Last week was certainly ugly in Dallas. Harry, what are you watching for?
Can Dak Prescott be better than Brock Purdy for the San Francisco 49ers? When I watched that game last year, Brock Purdy was a better quarterback in that matchup. The loss that the Dallas Cowboys have right now on their record, Joshua Dobbs was better than Dak Prescott. So that's what I'm looking for in this ball game. Can Dak Prescott be that dude, be that guy that everyone is expecting him to be in a big moment?
Yeah, a huge moment. It's a Sunday night game in San Francisco, and it's probably, to this point, the biggest game of this NFL season. Yesterday, sitting right there, our resident Cowboys swagoo, talking about the magnitude of this game for Dak Prescott.
This is about four. These particular games, how do we judge quarterbacks in the NFL, right? We know, how many years have we sat on this set and said Dak Prescott is good?
Mm-hmm.
Wait, like, yeah, he's a guy you can win with. You only get into the upper echelon in moments. This is one of those moments, one of those games.
It is that. It does feel that way. It feels like it's a measuring stick game in part for the Cowboys because the 49ers look like the best team in the NFL, and an even larger part for their quarterback because this team has been his house of horrors. What does he need to do?
Yeah, and number one, you got to respect the middle of that San Francisco defense. Those linebackers, Greenlaw and Hufanga, when he drops down, is spectacular. So I totally agree. He's got to outplay Dak Prescott. Number two, he's got to have like a very good understanding. I would not throw right that much against San Francisco's defense. This is a little bit nerdy, but I think I would throw left way more if I was Dak Prescott. He's got to spit the ball to the perimeter. So
why left more than right?
Charvarius Ward plays to the right side of our offense.
Got it.
He's playing at a very high level, and I think that's very dangerous for Dak Prescott.
Mm-hmm.
Diamador Lenore plays to the left side, and he's good, but I don't think he's playing as high as Ward. So if I was Dak Prescott, I would throw to the left side of the field way more. Again, that's very nerdy for everyone to pay attention
to.
But that's exactly what I would live. So absolutely, I'll play Brock Purdy. I agree with that point. Number two, CeeDee Lamb's got to have more explosive plays than Brandon Ayuk. America, Brandon Ayuk has become a number one wide receiver, and CeeDee Lamb is a number one wide receiver. But Ayuk's got way more explosive plays right now in my eyes when you watch the tape. And he's making more plays on a football downfield. CeeDee Lamb's a very good player. So, like, which one of those guys wins out on that? And then, two, San Francisco is not only a talented defense. It is by far the defense that runs through the football best and tackles best. If Dallas doesn't win, like, the yards after catch type of game versus San Francisco's defense, it's going to be hard to consistently move the ball and score points.
Yeah, so there's the X's and O's piece of this, which is fascinating, and then there's the psychology piece of this, and I always turn to my psych major, Kimberly Martin. The psychology of this for Dak, we saw it starting right away Sunday. They're asking him immediately about it after their big win, and he's firing back. What is at stake psychologically for Dak in this game?
I think this is a big must-win for the Cowboys from the standpoint of this is a show-me-who-you-are game. We know that Dak is a wonderful quarterback. We know that the Cowboys are a good team. On paper, you know that coming into most matchups, they're going to have the better roster, right? Except these are the moments. For me, this is almost bigger than a divisional game, only from the standpoint of this is a team that we have seen you can't get past. Mm-hmm. And as a locker room, as a franchise, like Jerry even said it, they're a great team. We will see who we are, and we will see who the Cowboys are, because it's not just about regular season anymore for the Dallas Cowboys. They're going to have a good record. That's what always happens. But what are you going to do when you get to the playoffs? And this is a team that has stopped them the last couple years in the playoffs.
I think when you look at Dak Prescott and you look at this offense, they're going to have to run the football too, right? Even it's easier said than done, but you look at the last two matchups, and the Dallas Cowboys haven't had over 80 yards rushing. Mm. The San Francisco 49ers have possessed the football 14 more minutes than the Dallas Cowboys. Shout out to him, Bo, even though he's a stinky Phillies fan.
Yeah. And then you just called him in stinky?
Yeah, Phillies fan.
We'll get to that.
Yeah, we're going to get to that a little later. But I think from an offensive standpoint, Dak Prescott is going to have to be that guy. And I talked about Agnew this entire summer. Every time we came on here, what does Dak have to do? I don't care about what he has to do. But when it comes to those big moments, that's when I want to care about Dak Prescott. That's what I want to see him be. I want to see him make the proper throws when it's your opportunity to do that. I want to see you take care of the football in the red zone. That's what Dak Prescott has to do. And this go route right here to CeeDee Lamb, if he throws that football out there and allows CeeDee Lamb to go get it, now that pressure would have been on the San Francisco 49ers and a young Brock Purdy, a rookie Brock Purdy, to go down and score and match what the Dallas Cowboys had did last season.
Yeah, that would have been a touchdown if he'd put it where it should have been instead of the big play that it was. And so there's all of this fancy stuff. And then there's also the stuff that happens right at the line of scrimmage, which also will go a long way towards deciding this.
Yeah, that's, you know, everyone wants to talk to the X and O's, but I'm going to talk about what really matters most, you know, when playing a game of football, and is the physicality. Obviously, you know, when you talk about physicality, you talk about the trenches. But even more so than that, for me, as far as physicality, I know we're going to talk about the 49ers defense. You got Nick Bosa, Eric Armstead, you know, Hargrave, all these guys up front. Can the Dallas Cowboys match the 49ers' relentless physicality as it relates to the 49ers' defense? Also, we're not even talking about the trenches here. Dan O pointed it out. It's the yards after catch.
They're the best in the league.
That's part of physicality.
Yep.
The San Francisco 49ers are the best team in the National Football League at yards after catch. Their ability and a lot of it has to do with, like, Deebo Samuel. Their ability to break tackles and gain those extra yards, those are the killers as it relates to getting off the field, particularly on, like, third down.
Yeah. You talk about Dak Prescott, right? We have a lot of stats that get thrown out that aren't quarterback stats. This is one of them. The last two times Dak has played against San Francisco's defense, and it's been third down with four or more yards to go, which is, you know, a little bit of a quarterback situation. It's not we can run the football. It's 3-for-22. 3-for-22.
Wow.
And could get done. So a lot of times, like, we lean into it's the quarterback. And this is one of those games that Dak Prescott has the opportunity versus one of the best defenses in the NFL to start to rewrite their narrative. And the other thing is this. They lose this game, that's two conference losses.
Yeah. Yep.
They'd be at least two games down to Philly and San Francisco when we're talking about they're a playoff team, but then they're going on the road again in these playoffs.
Green, one thing I also want to point out here, when I watch the Dallas Cowboys, and I know it's early in the season, we just basically hit the quarter point. Dallas Cowboys, they're like a front-running team. What I mean by that is they've jumped all over teams.
How?
Whether it's, you know, their defense swarmed, their defense scored touchdowns.
That's the thing.
And they jump out on you. And so it lets Dak and the Dallas Cowboys offense off the hook.
And they're comfortable, right?
That's right. Dak Prescott, with the lead, has the number one QBR in the National Football League.
Yeah.
When he's behind, he's, you know, he's near the bottom of the NFL. So I think this is where this game is going to be really important, because now you got to go blow for blow with a team that's just as good or better than you.
You can't rely on getting spotted points essentially by your defense. Guess how many turnovers Brock Purdy has in 9 career starts? 3. So, like, if you're going into this game, we're saying, well, Dak Prescott's got to outplay Brock Purdy. Usually the Dallas defense is like, we'll get you 10. We'll get you 14 type of thing with our you're not going to get it more than likely with Brock Purdy. He doesn't give the ball away. So now, to your point, like, they're going to have to go and blow for blow when it comes to not being reliant on getting some of the and the thing with Dallas' defense, I would say, is this. That's a little bit different this year with San Francisco's offense. Dallas' defense hasn't been stretched sideline to sideline like San Francisco's is. It's going to stretch them. The way that they are stretching teams, 53 and a third, and the ball distribution, and then Ayuk's big play making down the field, I'm telling you, that's different about San Francisco's offense this year.
And it's not just Debo, though. It's George Kittle you have to tackle. It's Christian McCaffrey you're going to have to
keep
tackle.
Going.
Right? And it's Brandon Ayuk you're going to have to – Kyle Juszczyk. It's multiple guys from a defensive perspective if you're the Dallas Cowboys that you're going to have to be able to tackle in space. And because that's what San Francisco – they live off of that. They live off of, you know what, we're going to get the ball quickly to our guys. And most 9 times out of 10, they bank on their guys winning, and they do.
Let's put it as simply as we can. The 49ers, through a quarter of the season, have shown themselves to be the best team in the NFL. Cowboys are going to go in there and try and prove they belong right next to them Sunday night. It shapes up, I think, as the biggest game of the NFL season so far. Meanwhile, baseball all day and all night yesterday, and the game of the night was in Philadelphia. What an atmosphere for game 2 of a National League wildcard matchup. We got the Marlins, we got the Phillies. Bottom of 4, Phil's up 2-0. JT Real Muto, no doubter off of David Robertson to left, a solo shot. His 4th postseason home run as a Philly. Bills take a 3-0 lead. Harry refuses to even look as a fan of the Braves. And that can be the matchup next. I'm giving it away. Phillies won again last night. Aaron Nola on the mound. Top of 5. 2 on, 1 out for the Marlins. Jesus Sanchez, the grounder. That's Turner turning to Nola and the Phils. Out of a jam. Crowd loves it. It's like an SEC football game in that place. Nola, 7 innings, 3 hits, no runs, 3 strikeouts. Bottom of 6. Bases juiced. 1 out. Bryce Stott ends the series with that swing that is long gone for a grand slam to right field. The Stott shot in the ballpark goes crazy. Look at the reaction. He knows what it means. Phillies win it 7-1. Set off the fireworks. Pop off the bottles of champagne and bring on the Braves in the National League Division Series. How do you feel about it, Harry?
Bring it on, Himbo. It's not just the trivia question. Bring it on, Hembo. Let me know what you want to put on it. Philly. I'm locked and loaded, baby. I'm ready.
So Hembo is the crazy Phillies fan. Harry is the crazy Braves fan. Those teams will go head-to-head in the next round for the second straight year. Philly has a 2-0 series record against the Braves in the postseason. All the series ended yesterday, so you see all the DS matchups are ready, and we'll dive into this with Jeff Passan a little later in the hour. Meanwhile, as we continue, I think I said Zach Wilson may have saved his career last week, but Dan Orlovsky is going to explain as we go on why this week's game is actually even bigger. Plus, has Bill set Mac back? Who's more to blame in New England? And is it already too late to fix it this year? We'll answer all those questions and more. It's Get Up on ESPN.
Two guys drove to work. Neither guy wore a seatbelt. One guy got a ticket. One guy didn't. The same two guys drove home. One guy wore a seatbelt. One guy didn't. One guy made it home. The guy not wearing his seatbelt didn't. Don't risk it. Click it or ticket. Paid for by NHTSA.
Delicious, meat nutritious, and the snack that packs a real protein punch. Wonderful Pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Wonderful Pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you're on the go a lot, taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful Pistachios a complete protein, providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures.
So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut, or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snacking game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
Get Up is brought to you by Liberty Mutual Insurance. Only pay for what you need. Show us that boy bag.
Oh, no, 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 no. Man, that boy bag.
Man, that boy bag.
Relax, Greeny. This is my segment. Boom. Oh, oh, damn, Greeny. Boom. Right in the bread basket. My goodness, Greeny. It's like taking candy from a baby. Oh, my goodness. Watch it, watch it. Come here. Keep going. Oh, my goodness. That boy bag. Let's do it again. Damn, that boy bag.
That boy bag. You're at college games now and everyone's yelling that boy bad at you. You sent me a video.
Yeah, I'm at Duke University. A dude yells my name, Harry, Harry, Harry. I come over to say hello to him. I'm thinking he's a fan. He immediately goes, that boy bad. We got kids, we got parents, kids in front of the TV saying, that boy bad. So guess what, Greeny? Guess what time it is?
It's time to go that
boy. That boy bad time, Greeny. And we're going to start with Roman Wilson, wide receiver for the Michigan Wolverines. Yeah. Now, look at his catch. Oh, my goodness. He caught it on his head. He caught it on his shoulder. He caught it on his helmet. Greeny, Roman Wilson, that boy bad.
That
not
boy
only
bad.
Is that boy bad on this play, he is tied for the most touchdown receptions in college football right now. Number one, he's tied. Greeny, one more time. Roman Wilson making that young man look silly.
That boy bad.
On to the next play.
Okay.
Let's keep it moving, Greeny.
Yeah.
We're going to go to Khalil Mack.
Oh.
Now, people tell me coaching isn't hard.
Oh.
Josh McDaniels makes me think otherwise. Because if Khalil Mack has two sacks, at some point you will say, we're going to tip him. We're going to bang him. We're going to double team him. We're going to cut him. Hell no. He didn't. So Khalil Mack didn't have one sack. He had two sacks. He had three, Greeny. He had four. He had five. Greeny, the man had six sacks.
Six.
Why? Because that boy bad. On to number three. Oh, one, two, three. Shout out to my boy Brandon there at the back. We're going to go Christian McCaffrey.
Woo!
Not only does he do it in the run game, he does it in the pass game.
Yeah.
But he's elusive. He's electrifying. He's that dude. When they got him in the trade, it made this team that much better. But I want to get to this last
play.
Check this out. Watch him hurt. Little hurt. But I like the fact that you see Deebo Samuel. You see Kyle Juszczyk. You see George Kittle blocking for their guy. Why? Because that boy bad.
Harry Douglas, that boy bad, every single week. Meantime, our next stop is New England, where the 1-3 Patriots this week will look to bounce back against the Saints after a 38-3 beatdown in Dallas last weekend. Mac Jones, to say he has struggled would be underselling it. He's already thrown four interceptions. He's 23rd in the NFL in total QBR. And listen, it is becoming fashionable to say because it's becoming almost impossible to ignore. Dan, how much of the blame for what the regression that we have seen in Mac Jones from a very promising rookie season to what we are seeing now? How much of that do we have to put at the feet of his legendary head coach?
Respectfully, a significant amount. Since they've drafted Mac Jones, give me one move that they've made that has been unquestionable that's going to make Mac Jones better. Outside of Bill O'Brien this year, one move. There hasn't been like this really big offensive line signing that's going to make them that much better. There hasn't been a perimeter player. You go, there we go. That's going to help. Obviously, last year was a complete disaster. Try to tell everyone about that. And I said this before the year, okay? Where do we honestly rank New England's skill position players in that conference? Indy, maybe better. Maybe Tennessee, but even Hop has made some plays down the field. So we're asking this third-year quarterback who's got his third offensive coordinator in 3 years who had a defensive disaster as his play caller last year to go, take the jump, take the leap. Now, Mac Jones, you got to own some of your own stuff when it comes to your feet in the pocket. I talked about that Monday morning. They cannot throw the ball outside right now, and that's a little bit because of Mac's feet and a lot of it because they don't have people on the outside to win. But there hasn't been outside of the signing of Bill O'Brien. I can't think of one addition to that offense that has made me think, This is about Mac Jones and getting him better.
That's right. And so here's the way I view this, and you tell me if this makes sense to you. When players do things that seem so uncharacteristic of them, this is exactly not what you would have thought Mac Jones' problem
was going to be. Well,
that's what Bill
O'Brien said. That was the word he used. He was like, Mac made some decisions that were very uncharacteristic. Simply put, there's nothing on this offense, there's nothing on this roster, if you're a fan of the New England Patriots, that excites you. There's also nothing right on this roster that if you're an opposing defense, that scares you, that you think, okay, what are we going to do to neutralize that? And I think Mac Jones, the question of where does Mac Jones go from here? Is he lost? No. He's still a good quarterback. We saw him display that as a rookie. But their season is lost because what is happening in New England can't be fixed overnight.
And to me, the Mac Jones piece of this is really just the stepping stone to the Bill Belichick conversation here. Now, look, you started your career playing for Bill, and Bill deserves all the credit in the world. He is the most accomplished head coach in modern pro football history. And you know him better than any of the rest of us, having played for him. But lately, it feels like that whole in Bill we trust thing, all these decisions that we generally just give him the benefit of the doubt, it feels like a very long time since one of them turned out to work.
For the first time in a long time, New England Patriots are irrelevant. Think about that.
Yeah. Mm.
The preeminent dynasty in the National Football League, they are irrelevant as it relates to the rest of the National Football League. And a lot of that has to do with Bill Belichick, the GM, not necessarily Bill Belichick, the coach.
Mm-hmm.
No one can deny, no one can deny his coaching acumen. I've always said he's a football genius. But the GM is killing the coach in Bill Belichick right now.
That's literally what someone said to me yesterday.
That's literally what's happening in New England.
Someone in the league.
The GM is killing the coach right now. And we know that, listen, we know he's aiming for that Don Shula all-time winning record, but, I mean, right now, the Patriots, like Dan, everyone has said, there's nothing on this roster that scares anyone.
He is 29 wins shy of Don Shula to become the winningest coach in football history.
Well, we always talk about how you have to surround these young quarterbacks with talent, right? And that's just not the case when it comes to Mac Jones. And Mac Jones, I'm not going to sit up here and say he had a phenomenal rookie season, but he had a promising one.
No doubt.
And then when you go into year two, and you would hope that your quarterback would get better and build off what he did in year one, and he doesn't have an offensive coordinator, and then you see what's going on now, and they don't have the skill position players. And I'm going to go to the running back position, right? Right now, Mac Jones is 30th in the National Football League when it comes to targeting his running backs. I'm accustomed to seeing a James White, sweet feet, doing his thing, lining up outside, giving linebackers and safeties hell on a frequent basis.
Yeah.
Also, I'm used to seeing Deion Lewis, Danny Woodhead, Shane Vereen, these type of guys. Right now, they have Ezekiel Elliott and they have Rhamondre Stevenson. Those are guys that aren't built like the ones I just mentioned and named.
They're pounders.
Let me say something real quick. Mac has to own his feet. They have to get better, okay? What we saw against Dallas was a quarterback that is incredibly frustrated with what's going on with his career in New England off of last year. And then you don't have to be a brain surgeon to look around and be like, I don't got a lot of help right now with what I'm playing with.
He looks lost, and it doesn't look like it's going to get any better before it gets a lot worse. As we continue, it's Wilson versus Wilson Sunday, a mile high, and the stakes are even higher. Will it be Zach or Russ who winds out on top? We'll talk about it next. It's Get Up on ESPN. Hi, it's Mike Greenberg letting you know ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sportsbook of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me, plus many more. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today. New users get a bet reset up to $1,000 in bonus bets if your first bet doesn't win. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Back on Get Up, bottom of the hour. Let's play a game called What's Your Number? Kmart, how many receiving yards will Tyreek Hill have against the Giants?
This is tough, Granny. I'm going to say 2,000. You know that Michael Jordan meme? Like, I took that personally.
Yeah.
Like, for the Dolphins, they got spanked by the Bills. And this is a game where they're going to say, okay, you know what? Everybody was high on us, And then the Bills beat us, and now no one's talking about us? Okay, now we need to reestablish ourselves. I think Tyreek is going to go off.
All right, Harry, what's your number? Josh Allen, how many passing yards against Jacksonville?
I'm going to go 275. I don't think anyone is playing better than him at the quarterback position right now. He's a guy that can rush the football. Also, he's throwing lasers left and right. Stephon Diggs, those guys don't have an issue. A lot of people thought it was going to be coming into the season. So I'm going to go 275. Josh Allen is on a heater.
That game's going to be Sunday in London. D Wood, how many total touchdowns will Zach Wilson have against the Broncos?
Man, I'm going four.
Let's go.
I'm going out there. I'm going out there. Listen, go head to head with Pat Mahomes. Okay, I'll play Pat Mahomes. Now you're going against one of the worst defenses in the league in the Denver Broncos. Give me four. Why not?
Four.
Why not? Yeah.
Wilson.
Yeah.
Okay, the last time somebody at this desk said that, it was me.
It didn't go that way. But
see, why do you got to bring up
you were just
stuff.
A week early.
I'm a week early, D-Wood.
Okay, gotcha. You were just a week early. Like most geniuses, you're way ahead of your time. In the meantime, speaking of Zach Wilson, Robert Saleh asked what he's taken away, what his young quarterback has taken away from a breakthrough game against Kansas City. Here was the answer.
Confidence. Just, you know, he's when he's playing in timing and rhythm and he's sure of himself and he trusts what he sees, he's doing a great job. His like I said, his mental toughness and his perseverance and resilient mindset, he's done a great job. And I just, for him, just stay confident, trust your feet, trust your eyes, let it rip.
Let it rip. I could swear someone at this desk said they needed to do that last week, and that's exactly what they did. So why are you telling me this weekend's game in Denver is the biggest game of his career?
Because can you do it again? You know, that this is the biggest moment in Zach Wilson's career. There's all the conversation and the doubt. And Greeny, for the first 2 years of his career, there wasn't a high level of expectation for the football team. Now, going into the season, there was. He's not supposed to play. Now he plays, and all of a sudden, the world's ending. He goes on Sunday Night Football against the best player in the league and goes toe-to-toe with him and has the best game of his career. Now it's like, well, maybe he doesn't stink. Now maybe it's, well, he was being held back, and the confidence is there, and the trust is there, and so the talent and the ability. Zach Wilson, can you go do it again? You and I love golf. The hardest thing in golf is to follow a birdie with another birdie. Mm-hmm. And so Zach Wilson had his birdie on Sunday night. Can he go do it again? And I think what the Jets kind of figured out a little bit, and hopefully America did, was Zach's not a thinker. He's a thrower. I say that all the time. There's quarterbacks who are thinkers, and there's quarterbacks who are reactors in many ways. He's a reactor. They didn't simplify their offense. They didn't do anything revolutionary. They just got aggressive on first down. Wood, what's the easiest down to throw the football on?
First down.
First down, because especially with the Jets, we want to run the football and play good defense. Well, defenses are going to sit there and go, we want to commit bodies down to the line of scrimmage to stop the run. Well, all they did was throw the football more on first down, and that freed Zach up to go, okay, I have one safety in the middle field. I'm getting man coverage. It's going back to recess, Harry.
Yep.
In the playground, my guy better than your guy. Before Zach ever got the football, he knew he was throwing to.
Right.
So then the thinking went away, and the ability to throw became premium. That's the focus for Nathaniel Hackett again this weekend. Be aggressive on early downs. It helps your offense and unlocks the quarterback's mindset.
And that was my thing. In that game against the Kansas City Chiefs, I thought Nathaniel Hackett put him in the best situations for him to be successful, right? Got him out on the edge with some bootlegs. Also, Zach Wilson made the plays, though. You look at getting Garrett Wilson the ball, he had 9 catches. So you get your best playmaker of the football. You have to do that game in and game out. But the ball location to his tight end.
Spectacular.
The tight ends got involved. The back shoulder, putting it where only his guy can catch it. But my question is, we seen Zach Wilson in a positive light on Sunday Night Football. That's my question moving forward. Can we see it on a consistent basis?
Yeah.
Because if we can see that on a consistent basis, I think the New York Jets will be sitting right where they want to be sitting at the end of the season. But if you don't, then they're
the
not
biggest game
make
of his career.
And he's doing it against the right team, right? Because, I mean, Denver's defense has obviously really struggled. 2 weeks ago, they gave up 70 points. Last week against Justin Fields, who had never thrown for 300 yards in his life, Fields lit them up.
Field day, yeah.
And then there's all the external stuff that comes with this game, the Sean Payton comments that riled them up and everything. It feels like there is a lot going into this game on Sunday.
There is so much going into Sunday. I think with Zach, it's always, can you do it again? I think my hope is that this is the beginning of Zach Wilson's menace era. I really hope that game where he had Taylor Swift thinking he was a better quarterback than Patrick Mahomes for a little bit. I hope he's on his vigilante-ish right now because he is so talented. For Zach Wilson, it is about maturity and is it a, and it's about what's in here. Now, the key moment for me in that game was him standing on the sideline and with teammates around him saying, like, I blew it. You know why that was big? Because the Zach Wilson I have seen in Florham Park didn't get it. Like, he was quick to deflect. He was quick to take praise, but not. But it's a wee thing when we mess up. This was a guy who understood the in that moment, it was on me. And I hope that this unlocks his ability to play confidently, fearlessly, because he has so much talent. But he's got to protect the football and just make smarter decisions.
I agree with you. And you know why he said that? Because he knew if he had the ball in his hands, they were going to win. If he got one more chance, he was going to lead them down there and win that game. You're very close to the situation. You're close to the people. What did you take away, and what do you expect Sunday?
I think, look, I echo what these guys were saying. You know, how they say, I want to see it again. It's almost like with my children. When they do something right, I know. Once you show me one time, then that's, I know you can do it every time.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing with Zach Wilson.
Your kids aren't perfect?
Yeah, no. Hey.
Close to it, Bishop.
Yeah, they're right there.
Five of the seven are.
Yeah. You can't have all seven perfect now, Dan, okay? But listen, it like when you go out there on Sunday Night Football, on that stage, and you all play Patrick Mahomes, like,
come on,
bro,
yeah.
You can do it again. Yes. Now. Yes. You can do it again. Now you need to show me. And I think, and I absolutely agree with you with this, you know, this game coming up against a different defense that's one of the worst defenses in the league. Bro, it's literally served up for you to go out there to show everyone that,
and
hey,
Sean Payton,
I'm here and I'm ready to embrace this moment.
Yeah,
right.
I think the challenge for Zach is going to be not being overly aggressive. You know, like, we've sat here all week and been like, Zach, get aggressive, aggressive, aggressive. You also don't want to go out there and be like NBA Jam and say, he's on fire and I can make any type of throw. Mm-hmm. So it's like being aggressive in all the right moments, specifically.
Is it the moves?
When you see man coverage, I think that's when you want to do it, rather than thinking, I'm just going to throw the ball anywhere at any time. You want an aggressive mindset, not a reckless one.
It's not time for a heat check. Necessarily a mile high.
Respect your opponent.
Great game.
I understand that the Denver Broncos have not been good on defense. But one thing that the NFL has taught us, you got to go into each week respecting your opponent.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Okay. I mean, the Jets are not in a position to look past anybody.
Right.
Clearly.
Right.
All right. Throwback Thursday. D Wood, we missed you last week as you were being honored by your high school. But in your honor, we smashed the helmets in your honor. So we're going to show you how everybody did. And you tell us what you think of the performance. Okay, so let's start. We've got Danny first. Dan smashed the Lions and the Packers. What do you think here? Here we go.
Watch this, boy.
Yo! Oh! Did you see that shrapnel?
Look at that
the shrapnel
strength.
Like
Yo.
Went up into the roof.
Well, yeah.
Okay. Dan, I'm thoroughly impressed with that, bro.
Yeah.
Like, thoroughly. Like, that's my guy right there. Yes, yes, sir.
All right, this is okay. Harry. What do you think of Harry there? Take a look at Harry.
Harry took out his teammate, though.
Come on, what?
It's a lot of glue.
You could have put a little bit more oomph into it.
Okay. All right, here comes Kmart. This was Kmart's smash.
The wind-up. We got the wind-up?
Okay.
I hit it, though.
Bro. You did. You hit it. But you know what? You had, like, you got two hands on the mallet. Like, bring that thing. Like,
you almost fell down, too. The falling down part.
That's a heavy mallet, yo. That thing is
D-Wood,
heavy.
I almost lost it.
And oh, okay.
Finally, mine. Take a look at this one. This is not good.
Oh, boy.
What? They say no weights, no dates?
Nope. Bro, you got to put that thing into it, Brady.
I don't
like,
got that thing.
You got
that problem. Whatever that thing is, I don't got it. It took me like five hits to dent it.
It looked like Greedy was swinging a marshmallow.
I'll tell you why it happened. D-Wood will be the only one who remembers this. The one time I ever tried to do this before, I missed it completely.
Yes.
Remember, I hit the table. So this time I was just being really careful to make
sure.
Can I ask
you an honest question?
Yeah.
Around the house, when you got to get something fixed.
There are people for that.
You don't even have to ask the question. You've already asked the question.
Have you ever cut the grass?
One and a half times. I did it once. And then I thought to myself, well, that's got to be good for like 6 months. And then I was about halfway through the second time, and I went and I said, we're calling someone to do this. Because that was, when you grow up in apartment 25D of a building, you don't realize how quickly that grows, man. Like 3 days later,
this is your best moment.
What happened here? Yeah, no, I got a million of them, trust
hang
me.
Hang a picture. Can we hang a picture?
Hang a picture? What, are you kidding? I can't even take a picture. If you ask me right now, where is the screwdriver in your house? I wouldn't be able to tell you.
We would call Stacey, that's right.
Yeah, Stacey could tell you. She said it was in the credenza. I don't even know what a credenza was. We got, there's so many things I don't know, but let's go back to all of this. Danny smashed the helmet really well. Me, not as much. Coming up next, I'm sorry, what? Did you hear what a Giants player said to his own fans? He got everyone's attention, including ours. You'll hear it next. We're back on Get Up, and this is a special edition of Sound Off this week. We're only going to do one item, and that was Evan Neal of the New York Giants sounding off on the fans of his own team after Monday night's debacle. He said, they were booing us, so I said, boo louder. Why would a lion concern himself with the opinion of a sheep? The person that's commenting on my performance, what does he do? Flip hot dogs and hamburgers somewhere? Everyone at this desk cringes in unison as I read that. It is very much worth pointing out. Evan Neal posted what I think is a sincere and heartfelt apology last night. He wrote, I am wrong for lashing out at the fans who were just as passionate and frustrated as I am. I let my frustrations in my play and desire to win get the best of me. I had no right to make light of anyone's job, and I deeply regret the things I said. We are working day in and day out to grow as a team, and this was an unnecessary distraction. I apologize. So as I was reading the initial comments there, I could see out of the corner of my eye, D-Wood just kind of went like this. What were you thinking?
Well, first of all, you'll never win when it, as it relates to trashing the fans. You're just never gonna win that battle. And more, but I think more importantly is the character flaw in that statement. You know, the fact of how you view yourself to the, you know, to your fans.
Be above
fans.
Them.
That's right. The fact that you view yourself above the fans, of people who pay money to come see you play, is something that he's gonna have a hard time getting over. You, it's gonna be hard putting that genie back in the bottle for Evan Neal.
Danny, what was your reaction?
Shocked that he said that, especially with where he came from school-wise and Nick's
Alabama. Yeah.
Like that, I was surprised. I think number one, first of all, there's nothing wrong with flipping hamburgers or hot dogs for a living. People are making a living. You know, that's the number one thing. Number two, all of us, and Evan needs to remember this. It's a privilege to play in the NFL. It's a lot of hard work. It's a lot of sacrifice. It's a privilege for us to sit at this desk. It's taken a lot of hard work, but it's a privilege. Never lose sight of that, because there was things that happened for us to get here that were out of our control, that we got lucky with or we were blessed with. The last thing is this. The only reason that we have these jobs and that Evan Neal has that job is because of the fans. That's the only that you get to make the money that you make because of the fans. So whether we like or dislike some of the things that he said or whatnot, the only reason we have these jobs and he has that job is because of the fans. And we can never lose sight of that.
What bothered me was just so tone deaf. It was like after that performance, of all performances, the offensive line, the amount of sacks given up, it was a complete drubbing. And for you to get so frustrated in that moment, I understand why you're frustrated. He said in his apology, like, it was really about my play. I was frustrated with my play. That's it. That's the only thing you guys should be frustrated about, because the fans have every reason to be frustrated by what they saw.
It's also disingenuous, right? Those people that you're talking about spend their hard-earned money to go watch you play the game of football. And he talks about being a lion. I haven't seen a lion play yet since Evan Neal got to the New York Giants football team. And I understand he was drafted to be in the first round, early in the draft. But what I've seen him display last year, what I've seen him display this year, is not lion football. He's more like Zazu. That's the way he's been playing. So for him to even feel like he's above anybody in those regards to even make that statement blows my mind. But I think all y'all said it, though. Like, the character part about it. for you to feel like you're above other people just because your money that you're making is better than them is bad. It's bad business. I'm glad he apologized, yeah. but the damage was already done when it
especially
came
to New York City.
And it also speaks, though, for me, to the frustration that is building within that locker room among these players. Because last year, the Giants did overachieve. They overachieved expectations. And for this year, this has been a terrible season. You saw Brian Daboll last year, even when they were losing close games, coming back to win close games, he held that locker room together. And this season feels completely different from last year. It feels hopeless right now when you watch them play. And obviously the frustration is building behind the scenes.
Listen, he's a young person.
Yeah.
And we must remember that young
experience.
People
yeah.
can learn from this.
Yeah.
And I hope that he has. And I'm going to take his apology at face value.
Yes. No doubt.
In large part because I think he apologized for the right thing. Mm-hmm. The most important part of his apology is, I had no right to make light of anyone's job, and I deeply regret the things that I
right.
said.
Right.
That is the most important lesson I think anyone should take from this event, which is to say that if you're getting booed and you're frustrated and you want to lash back, you shouldn't do it, but I get it. But the particular way that he chose to lash back, to the point you were making, is extraordinarily insulting, bordering on offensive. The reality is, not only are you not better than the people who are flipping hamburgers and hot dogs for a living, you're also not beneath the people who are billionaires who are sitting in those stands.
Right.
That's a lesson I hope he and everyone take from this. So
yeah.
again, he can learn from this experience.
We
the world
can.
Will
yeah.
and should move on from this. But this was a bad moment all the way around. We'll talk more about it later, but we got passing ready to go because earlier today we showed you how the Phillies clinched earlier in this program. Let me now run the bases through the other clinchers we saw. Four of them. All the series ended yesterday. The Diamondbacks overcame a two-run deficit, upset the Brewers 5-2. It marked Arizona's first multi-game series win since the 2007 LDS. Next, the Rangers steamrolled the Rays in Tampa. Only friends and family in attendance for this series. Texas outscored the Rays 11-1 in the two games. And so Tampa, which won 99 games this regular season, out in a hurry. The Twins, meanwhile, also move on. They shut out the Blue Jays 2-0 yesterday, their first postseason series win since 2002. Carlos Correa drove in a run. He will now face his former team in the ALDS. So let's show you what we now set up for in these division series. Should be terrific. Minnesota was 4-2 against Houston this season. National League Phillies face Atlanta for the second straight year. Braves won that season series 8-5 in the regular season. And that is the marquee matchup in this next round. So here he is, the man himself, Jeff Passan, is with us. As we get set for what feels like as big a matchup as we will get in this postseason, no matter how far it goes, Jeff, what is the single most important factor fans need to know?
I wish this series, Greeny, were seven games. It deserves to be. We saw it last year. And remember, last year, Spencer Strider had an oblique. Max Fried had a virus. Now, Max Fried's coming off the injured list here. Spencer Strider's healthy. And the big advantage for the Atlanta Braves is that they could get four starts out of their top two pitchers, while Philadelphia, because it was in the division series, is only going to get Zach Wheeler two times and Aaron Nola one time. Now, this is going to be a series that may come down to the bats ultimately, so having great starting pitching is going to be imperative because, honestly, if you look at what happened in the division series, Greeny, great starting pitching is what advanced all the teams.
Absolutely, which is the contrary to what sometimes we expect in the regular season. Let's talk about the Phillies' home field advantage quickly. Hembo is never stops with this on the show. It does feel a little bit like watching an SEC football game.
Yep.
How real is that advantage and how much a factor is it?
It is very real. It is an enormous factor. I talked with a player yesterday who was in a series where there weren't so many fans in the park, and he said that plays a big role. I don't want to go play in Philadelphia. I don't want to go in front of the raucous, unimaginably loud people who are there. And here's the thing. It's almost becoming a self-fulfilling prophecy at this point for Phillies fans. Like, you go to that park, you'd better be loud because there's an expectation that you have to live up to.
All right, let's run through all four of them quickly here. Let's start with that one. Who wins Phillies Braves?
I hate predictions.
Nothing
good coming out of it. But
come on, Jeff.
The Atlanta Braves hit 307 home runs this season. They slugged 501, the highest in history. When you hit more home runs than your opponent, you win 86% of the time. I'm going with the Braves, but, man, the Phillies are really good too. But I'm going with the Braves. I can't look past that 104-win team.
All right, we will see. We're going to get a battle in the studio out of these guys as we go.
Sell out.
We will talk to you shortly. Everyone here is yelling at each other. Harry is excited about it. Danny not excited about it. Hembo not excited about it. Jeff Passan, we're always excited with you. We'll talk to you soon. Thank you very much. All right, I'm up against the bottom of an hour here. The biggest game of the year is on the way in the NFL. We'll tell you how number four can be his absolute best in week number five. Orlovsky's got tape. You'll see it right after this.